Welcome to What You Know About RJ, sharing stories and skills about restorative justice, a podcast of the California Conference for Equality and Justice. I'm your host, Gilbert Salazar. This season is about asking CCJ school partners about what their wisdom is regarding culture and relationships and justice in schools. And with me today is a superhero that I've known for a long time since he has worked in the community of good old Watts in California. I'm excited that he's here. I wish you could see him because he looks very fly, very dope as always. I'll pass the mic to him. Good. Introduce himself.
What's going on, everybody? My name is Victor J. Lee. I'm going into my sixth year in education. I consider myself a mentor first, then a teacher. I've been teaching math, like Gilbert pointed out, for 4 years in Watts. And I had the privilege to move back to my hometown of Pomona, and that's where I'm at right now. I'm also the executive director of Broken Records, where we just leverage our love for hip-hop to just push for some education reform. So I'm just happy to be here.
Victor, to start us off, what's something that you're passionate about that integrates or connects you as a teacher and you and your passions?
I'm most passionate about mentorship. I studied math in college. I was a math major, but I did not decide to become a teacher because of my love for math. I decided to become a teacher just so I could connect with young students, especially our most vulnerable students who just have so many negative experiences when it came to education. So, yeah, man, it's that mentoring that I'm most passionate about.
I remember when I was working with you in those years at ACPA, I always remember thinking, we did a video one time with some students, and you were the teacher in the video, and I just remember at that moment thinking, like, damn, I wish I had a math teacher like Victor.
Desmond, man, welcome, man. Welcome back. Yeah, there he is. All right, you do not on the board. Okay, anyone else? Okay. Oh, that's the bell. All right. We are ready to go. Yep, right there. Oh, man, Desmond. Man, appreciate you, man. I know your attendance has been, like, kind of spotty the last couple weeks, but I appreciate when you are here, man. Like, this class really misses your sense of humor, and that just gives me a lot of energy. So, yes, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Hey, yo, all right. So, we got our name on the paper. That's a great start. So now we just gotta do problems 5 and 6. And if you need your notes, go ahead and take out your notes. But I believe in you, man, and you got this, all right? Just let me know if you need any help, right?
Back in the day, because math was super traumatic for me, and I actually almost didn't graduate high school because of math. And because I just like didn't feel comfortable asking a question, or there was a lot of math was hard, and so, and there was nobody. I didn't have a nurturing math teacher until I was in community college, and so I always appreciate you. So we have like these like 17, 18 restorative beliefs, and one is all community members are worthy of consideration, dignity, and respect. What's been your experience, or what comes up for you when you hear that statement?
So when I hear a statement like that, it makes me think about this idea that everyone within the community has something to contribute, right? And when you start to recognize this, you're allowed to really humanize everyone, make them feel seen, heard, valued, understood, respected, or just the idea that you're able to connect with all these diverse people, humans, let's call them humans. It's easy to just call them students, right? But humans that are either in your classroom or at the school, on campus, or whatever. So just the idea that everyone has something to contribute to the community. And when you recognize that, you can just humanize them.
Mm-hmm. one of the components that we talk about is that CCJ talks about with RJ trainings is the schools that work to identify or meet students' needs and each other's needs. What have been some ways that you have been able or have attempted to meet students' needs?
Man, again, teaching in Watts, where that community's just been, just been through it, man. A lot of poverty in the community, violence. As a lot of things going on, there are a lot of needs for that community, and these needs are just beyond, or they're beyond academic needs, right? There's like physical needs, emotional needs. So for my students, I think one need that I try to meet every year is try to the need for a safe environment for them to learn, an environment where they feel valued, an inclusive environment where they see that their cultures and identities are represented in the classroom, like on the walls, in the curriculum, in the dialogue. So that's definitely a need that I aim for with my students. Also, this is obviously needs are case by case, right? Not everyone has the same needs. So there's been times where, you know, as an educator or as a mentor, really, that I have to go out of my way to figure out what is that specific need for the student and see how I can meet that.
Man, my guy, like, you still only have your name on here. Like, what do you need from me to make sure that you can come in and get started on these problems?
A calculator and a pencil.
Calculator and a pencil. Okay, so if you had a calculator and a pencil every day, you'd come in ready to work and to go. Okay. All right. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Okay, so we keep the calculators back there. Now the pencil's right here by my desk. So every day, man, you come in, just grab one, just get going. All right. All right. That sounds good. Yes. Yes. Desmond, oh yeah, like I said, bro, it's always great when you hear, like, just the energy is so much better. I just wonder, like, what can I do to make sure that you're here and on time every day?
I mean, well, I could just set a timer on my phone for like 7:30 when I need to go to bed, because I go to bed at 8 o'clock.
So you're saying setting your phone at 7:30 every morning will get you here on time?
Yeah.
Okay, you have your phone right now? Maybe we could just put that alarm in now.
I had one student, for example, who would get picked on a lot because he had crooked teeth, right? And I noticed when we would go on like field trips or whatever, he wouldn't smile, and whenever it's time to take pictures or stuff, he wouldn't smile. He had low self-esteem, difficult time introducing him to people. You know what, me, that's something like I could just identify with, because in high school, my teeth were pretty crooked as well. So it wasn't until actually I started teaching and had like that good insurance, I was able to really get braces myself, right? So I was talking to my orthodontist. I let him know about my student who and his issues that he had going on with like his self-esteem, and I've seen if he could like just hook it up, man. See if he could do some pro bono work to help him, and sure enough, the orthodontist agreed, got the student some braces, and that's just, I think, a need that was met that most teachers do not go out of their way to do. And I'll even be honest and say that was a very uncomfortable experience for me as well, to go out of my way and ask something of this orthodontist that I had literally had no relationship with besides going in and have them straighten up my teeth. But yeah, I feel like him getting those braces and boosting his confidence, self-esteem, and everything, I would definitely go a lot longer or further in life than whatever we're learning in math class during that time.
That's just like one of so many stories that I've heard from you and so many folks from ACWA of going beyond the classroom to meet a student's need and to support a student. You know, a big part of this season of this podcast is about relationships and culture, particularly for people who want to know more about this work. And RJ goes just beyond RJ. That's just the name for, I think, relationships and culture and justice. What were some ways that you as an adult, you as a teacher, that your needs were met or not met by colleagues or by leadership?
Before I address that, I do want to say that I think my experience or reasoning for getting into education is a little bit more unique. Usually when I have conversations with teachers and I ask them like, oh, what made you get into teaching? It's usually that story of having that one teacher who really pushed them and inspired them and changed their life and was like, you can do it, right? For me, that was never the experience. So I actually got into teaching because I wanted to work with students who also have never had that educator, who've never had that experience where someone like believed in them, even when they weren't performing at, they just weren't performing where they should be performing at. So that's always kind of been like my outlook going, or my really been my approach going into teaching. And fortunate for me, when I got my first position over in Watts, I was blessed to have an administrator who was willing to invest in me, like to understand that why I was going into teaching and why I wanted to make it more about academics and really figure out what these students' needs were and really help them and push them for them to reach self-actualization. So as an administrator's standpoint, as far as the support that they've given me, I've been blessed to have a lot of support. I feel like I've had some pretty radical administrators who are willing to invest in and believe in me and give me the space and resources I need to really connect and work with my students. I've also chosen to surround myself by very dope colleagues with very similar mindsets and very similar approaches and believe in doing the work that the same way that I do the work. So even on those days where it just feels like very challenging and overwhelming, I know I really have some colleagues I could check in with that can identify with what I'm going through, and that just really helps me through it. On the flip side, I definitely had some experiences where at an organizational level, I received a lot of pushback. And it definitely with some colleagues whose beliefs and values don't align with mine, I've also got to experience a lot of pushback, and it just makes it so much more difficult, especially when you're not just trying to change the lives of the students that you're working with, like in your class, but you're trying to bring about like education reform, like really address the system. It just makes it so much more difficult when you're trying to address like policies and curriculum and just how the school functions and operates on a daily basis. It's just more difficult or more challenging than working with the 30 kids that are in front of you at the time.
Mm-hmm. What does culture and justice look like in a classroom or in a school?
Mm. So when I think of culture, again, I think that's just the ability to connect with all these individuals within the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
And every community or every classroom has a diverse group of students, right? Ethnicity, sexual orientation, interest. It's just very diverse, and it's my responsibility as a teacher to create an environment where everyone is connected so that they can feel safe, included, and valued, right? I've found success with this through storytelling. I really love storytelling. My students then begin to trust me more when I become vulnerable with them, tell my stories. They humanize me. It also gives them the okay to like also tell their story. And when everyone's telling these stories and we know more about each other, you start to feel more like a community. You feel connected. And the idea is, once you feel connected to somebody, you're less likely to want to bring harm to them. I'll give you an example. A story that I tell, being a math teacher, is that in high school, I failed every math class that I ever took. Right? The birds are chirping.
Yeah, they're powerful.
Yeah, so I failed every math class that I took. I had to retake it over summer. And you just see, like, their faces, like, oh, my goodness, our math teacher, he sucked at math. and you just see, like, a wall kind of goes down, right? And they feel like, oh, okay. Because math could be a very intimidating space.
Mm-hmm.
As some people's brains just have a more difficult time reasoning mathematically, you know? But that just takes away a lot of the stress and anxiety related to math. I mean, I then go on and talk about the reasons why, like our grading system, how it doesn't really value intelligence or your skills. It just mostly values obedience. But still, just sharing a story like that with them makes it feel safe for them, right? Makes them feel like, okay, yeah, I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm gonna give them my best effort. So I think responsible educators go out of their way to make their students feel connected, to establish relationships with them, to make sure that they feel seen, heard, and valued, not only in the classroom, but also school-wide. I really like how the schools that I've worked at have really done a good job recognizing just our diverse students on campus through celebrating them and bringing awareness to like a lot of the struggles that they're going through, whether that's mental health or sexual orientation or recognizing different ethnicities, not only during like Black History Month, but throughout the whole school year, you know?
Myself as a student and myself as an adult working with teachers, in my own experience, one of the core values that a teacher has when they've shown up and when there's been like a trust for me as a student and when I've seen them build trust with other students, one of those core values that is named, you named it, folks have named it, and this is why I think the work of restorative justice can be powerful. And you named vulnerability. I'm done asking folks in trainings, why is vulnerability important? Because I think for all the reasons that you just named, and I know that you talked about storytelling and showing up in vulnerability. Why do you choose vulnerability?
Why do you choose vulnerability? I guess I choose to be vulnerable because I really want to like dismantle this power dynamic that exists between the teacher who's the holder of all knowledge, the authoritarian in the room. I don't want my students following me because they're supposed to, or I'm in the position of power, because I feel like that takes away a lot from them, specifically their ability to think critically about the world. Mm. When I say something, I would like them to challenge it. I would like them to want to have a dialogue or conversation around it, not just accept it as, oh, well, Mr. Lee's a teacher, it must be true. Because I feel like everyone loses when that happens, right? If I knew everything and I just tell my students what I know, then how will the world ever evolve if we're just recycling or they're just regurgitating information that they already have, right? So I really want them to think critically about the world, and I think that comes with showing, or with me being vulnerable, like showing them that I'm a flawed human being who doesn't know everything, but I'm willing to invest in you. I'm willing to facilitate learning. Yeah, so yeah, that's why I choose to be vulnerable with them, to tell the stories, because I think that's where they feel safe, and that's where that critical thinking comes from.
Mm. You know, so much about that connects. I connect to that around power and folks who think that if they are vulnerable, they're going to give up their power, and where themselves as a teacher, power and control are the ways in which they feel they can be safe. You know, this idea of I'm going to be unsafe if I share of myself. But I think, you know, time and time again, I see powerful teachers showing up in vulnerability, and like that, just like you're saying, like that offering or the like dismantling of their own power, that like shared power in the classroom.
I think that I guess it's easy for me to say, if I recognize my 6'3" black male privilege, that I don't really get challenged that much in the class by students, because like physically, like I can just look like I just be more difficult to challenge, right? Where my white short female counterpart, like they may get tested like all the time. So yeah, I recognize that, and that exists. However, I will strongly argue that I face less like disruptive challenges from my students, not because of me being 6'3" male, but because I do humanize them. I'm vulnerable with them. I build a relationship with them. We create this mutual respect, and yeah, it is about just taking away that power dynamic that's traditionally exists between a student and a teacher.
Mm-hmm. In this new world that we're currently living in this virtual world, whatever the new world looks like afterward, what's your vision for a school after the pandemic?
Man, so first of all, I just think it's crazy that it's going to take us, that it took a global pandemic for us to want to start considering like real education reform. What I mean by that is, as soon as it came out that we're going to distance learning, schools were scrambling to be one-to-one with technology. Like, we're way behind on that. That should have been a push years ago, especially with how society's evolving, with social media. You got kids gaming, making more than athletes, making more than teachers. And as they should, but I that just amazes me that it took a global pandemic for us to really want to have this conversation in a meaningful way. One thing I would like to see is less of a focus on productivity. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you what I mean mm-hmm. about that. I feel like our education system has students focus on just a little bit of everything, right? They got 7 different subjects, math, history, science, English, Spanish, whatever. At least I'm talking in high school, right? And students are trying to learn a little bit of everything. And I feel like when that happens and it's divided like that, you end up not learning anything. I mean, you know the old saying, like, the jack of all trades, master of none. That's what our education system has turned into. It's my belief that the purpose of education is to teach kids to think critically and to develop their literacy skills so that they can communicate those thoughts, right? And that these different subjects are just different vessels in which they can develop their critical thinking skills as well as develop their literacy skills, right? And some kids, they just can't do that in math. Like, that's, they shouldn't be punished by that. Some of the smartest adults I've ever engaged with weren't good at math, but they're okay in life, right? But we're so busy trying to focus on like making sure that these kids are so well-rounded and have just a little bit of everything that they end up not getting nothing. Like, I really want to focus on critical thinking. I really want to focus on literacy, right? But teachers, administrators, they're just so focused in content, making sure that our students are an expert in specific content instead of specific skills. I've seen a lot of schools reduce like the actual instruction time during this pandemic and distance learning. And I feel like that's also how it should have always been. And when you reduce like the instruction time, you really get to focus on, or you really have to focus on, what's important, right? And you look at other developed countries around the world that's already cut like the school day down and really focused on like just going hard in the paint for like 2-3 hours and then giving kids time to socialize and develop all these other soft skills. I feel like that's really the direction that we should be heading in. And then lastly, I would say a focus on how to learn, right? And that's kind of been my approach lately, is focus showing my students how to learn and not on what they're learning. Because the students are going to forget a majority of the things that we show them, right? They're going to forget the majority of the formulas that we go over in our math class, or they're going to forget like what specific laws and amendments and stuff that are in their history class. But what we should be focusing on is how to learn, how they can pursue the answers to these questions, how they can start asking their own questions, right, and pursuing answers to those questions, right? So I think hopefully we're focusing more on not specific content, but showing them how to learn and really just develop those critical thinking and literacy skills. That's my hope, man, moving forward.
Taking it back to in the next 2 weeks, how have you been? How are you going to, you know, sustain relationships with students and be vulnerable and try and meet needs virtually, digitally, via distance learning?
So the question was, how am I continuing to engage with students and connect with them during distance learning?
Mm-hmm.
I've found success doing that through social media, through my Instagram. And I know a lot of districts may have like policies around like social media and connecting with students on social media. I believe that's another thing that I feel like school is so behind in, like leveraging like social media's and the ability to connect with students on a platform where students like really enjoy and love and appreciate. So I recognize that other teachers may not be allowed to do that. I guess just through my IG, just posting stuff directly to them, like giving them like polls and things that they can really like engage with my content on, where they can respond to questions from like my stories or things like that. Tag them in a few things, really ask questions to like spark up dialogue on things that are happening around the world. And it's really a also a place where I can like just be silly, show my personality, have fun, crack jokes, make memes that they really appreciate. So I've been able to continue to do this, connect and engage with them, especially from a social distance with social media. I've decided to go this route a while ago, so I am definitely always cognizant of what I post on my social media to make sure that it's definitely student friendly. So I don't have two different accounts, a teacher account and a Victor Lee account. It's just all one and the same.
Do you share the Broken Records IG with students too, or is that more for adults?
Oh yeah, yeah. Students are on that as well. It's targeting adults, but I think it does bring a lot of awareness to like inequities in education, and I think students should be part of that conversation. I think they should be aware of what's going on. So yeah, students are on that as well.
And so specifically with Broken Records, Victor, what should folks know? What are you calling in?
Yeah, so really we just want to really influence the narrative around what it means to be a responsible educator that serves Black and brown students, right? Because there's so many teachers doing this around the country, right? But straight up, they're just anomalies. They're working in, most of the time, they're working in isolation. They don't have the support of their administrators, their colleagues, or their district, right? We want to give these educators a platform, right? Because once we shape the narrative in a way to make it say that no, this is how you're supposed to do it, more teachers will be inspired and also approach this work in that way. So with Broken Records, we want to show that you can really humanize our students' experience, humanize their learning experience, and connect with them and push their critical thinking skills. That is a way to improve student outcomes, especially for Black and brown students. So yeah, that's pretty much what Broken Records is about. And we do this all through like a hip hop lens, because hip hop is raw, authentic, unapologetic. And when you look at urban communities, it's the same thing. So it provides like the perfect context in which we can do this work, again, because what's happening in the community, whether at home or out in the streets or wherever, that really influences what's going on in the classroom. So we don't want to pretend like we don't see what's happening in society.
Can you share what's one responsibility that a teacher who's working with students of color or a teacher who's working with students whose identity is different from their own? Mm-hmm. Because just pause there. I remember Jenny, a colleague of mine who worked with us, calling us in about when we were training high school students to be student leaders, and it was half Black students, half Latinx students, and we noticed in the 2 days like this separation, this like just flow that was not happening. And so I remember Jenny, this was like a few years ago, calling us and calling me in about the responsibility and role of Latinx students and teachers around anti-Blackness, and to what's the role that we as Latinx people have to do. So just pausing there, what's a responsibility that a teacher working with students of color or with students who are of a different identity from their own, what's one thing that they need to work on or show up in?
I think recognizing their implicit bias, and knowing that we do paint these unfair, or at times unfair of stereotypes around our students based on our own past experiences with a certain ethnicity or demographic or age or gender. And I too am guilty of that. Even with my Black students, at my first year teaching, I too found myself sending the Black students out at higher rates than my Latinx students. And I really had to like check on why I do that and what would be a better response to that, you know? Why is a outburst from this Black boy penalized more difficult than another student who disrupts the class? So I really had to question myself and unpack some things before, so that I can just change my approach to discipline and connecting with my students.
Last question. What's a request of teachers distance learning?
I'll say again, show them how to learn. Not to focus on specific content. Show them how to navigate the internet. Show them how to find articles, empirical research articles. How to form an argument. How to support it with evidence. Not so much on specific content, but how to learn. That's going to be a skill that's just going to be so much more useful for them moving forward. Students are not going to remember most things related to content that we show them, but we can show them how to learn. And I do know one thing as well, that they'll remember how we make them feel. When you have conversations with students and you ask them who was their favorite teacher and why, they will definitely bring up how that teacher made them feel and how that inspired them to want to do better and be better. I think that's the other piece. And I understand that's going to be more challenging in this virtual digital world. But we just have to be creative with it. I use my Instagram, and I also try to meet with them live as much as possible through Zoom, just so that we still have some type of connection, right? I'm not just posting a bunch of worksheets or directions or videos online. I'm making an effort to really try and connect with them.
You ready to play a game?
Yeah, let's play it.
Okay, so in this game, so Broken Records has a chance to build a playlist for your version of RJ Trainees. And so, Mr. Lee, what is a song that you would play at the top of a games training, at the top of a community building training, at the top of a trauma training, and at the top of an anti-bias training. So once again, Broken Records gets to a playlist for your version of RJ trainings. What's the song that folks hear when they walk into a games, a community building circle training, a trauma training, and the anti-bias training?
Oh, man.
Oh.
Oh, boy. Okay, now you're making me go through my playlist, man. So the first one was...
It was the games.
Games. Okay. Yeah. Games.
Games.
I think games, I feel something... sillier, more upbeat, sillier. Yikes, man, this is tough. Let me come back to the games one.
Let's go. You know, and this is just, you know, a first draft playlist. You can always come back and edit. It's, you know, but
that's just music, man. It got to be perfect. I think just the RJ work, one song that comes to mind is We Don't Care, We Don't Care by Kanye. I know Kanye is a difficult name to bring up right now, but dude used to be one of my heroes. I'll even say he's the one who really got me into rap music. I guess I choose that song because he does a great job with his social commentary on what's going on in the communities, from a kid's perspective. And when I think of RJ, I think of considering the full picture, students' needs, and the challenges that they're facing. And I think that song definitely comes to mind. There's another song by J. Cole that actually does the same thing. It's actually one of my favorite songs. It is called, it's the outro for his KOD album. But he does the same thing. He really paints a picture of what's happening with the kids and things that they experience. And in this one, he tells a story about a kid getting shot and killed and how it's still kind of back to business as usual. And I feel like that's a fair reflection of both our schools and just society in general. I guess like more of the show must go on type of mentality.
Is this for community building training or for trauma?
I think that one would be more trauma. Yeah. And I guess it would be an ironic way to look at trauma in the sense that we don't really address it. Right? It's just business as usual, and kids just really just sit with these things. For community building, I'm going to say J-Rock's song, Win. Like, it's more like a celebratory upbeat.
Yeah,
like, it's not like we are winning. It's more, at least the hook at least, is more positive and optimistic. Like, yeah, like we're going to get this done. We're going to come together and get it done, right? So I guess that was really the first song that popped in.
That's good because, you know, you want folks to come in, like, hyped up for Circle. You know, it makes it much easier. So we got the anti-bias and the game.
Anti-bias. I'm going to say Thieves in the Night by Black Star. Let me pull up the specific lyric that comes to mind. He goes, I asked him why we follow the law of the bluest eye. He looked at me. He thought about it, was like, I'm clueless. Why? The question was rhetorical. The answer is horrible. Our morals are out of place and got our lives full of sorrow. So I guess really with me, that lyric is, again, having us question why we perceive things the way that we perceive things, or why we even accept things the way that we accept them. And I think that really goes with anti-blackness as well. Have you taken the time to really challenge these these beliefs that you may have implicitly developed for yourself. Now, games. Why is the games one so hard?
I was about to say that, you know, it's so funny. It's kind of like when we do the iceberg activity and, you know, what happens on a good day at school, what happens on a bad day at school. And it can be easy to name the bad day, but the good day, it's much harder sometimes.
I'm going to say for games, it's an older song, T.I., bring them out. Just hop the yell with them bell rows in your mouth. Because I remember when I played high school basketball, right? Mm-hmm. You know, at the beginning of the games, when the you would come out and do like your warm-ups, every high school around in America was warming up to that song. Yeah, that's really where that song takes me, back to the good old high school days.
Yeah, basketball games.
This
is solid. So games, T.I., bring them out, community building, J-Rock, win, trauma. Is it J. Cole outro for KOD album, or is it Kanye, we don't care? Or is it both?
Let's get them both.
And the anti-bias, Thieves in the Night, by Black Star. That's powerful. So, folks, you heard it here first. This is Broken Records. RJ playlist version for Booker Records RJ trainings. Thank you for your time. Thank you for playing the game. Thank you for dropping your wisdom and your knowledge. I'm always super excited to see you and be in your presence, even if it's in virtual space. Last thing I want to say is just a lot of gratitude for you. Anything else to claim or to call out as we finish up?
Really, just mentorship matters. Mentorship matters. We've all been in a place where we've had our hands held for a second while someone showed us how to walk. For some of us, we had the privilege of having that done at a very, very young age. Some kids never had it. So see how you can assume a mentorship position wherever you are. Show kids the ropes, expose them to different opportunities, different environments, and really help them cultivate hope by showing them that there's more out there.
With that, folks, you've listened to What You Know About RJ, sharing stories and skills about restorative justice, a podcast of CCJ. Check out our website, cacej.org, and please remember to like and subscribe. Thank you. Keep listening. Laters.